T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
In the meantime, I can say we have narrowed the choices to a number of cities that as of today include Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Edmonton, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Vancouver. There are no shortage of candidates that can help us do this. Again, the final determination will depend on COVID-19 conditions, testing availability, and government regulations.
And then there were 4 cities after that long list that Gary Bettman just reeled off, the NHL commissioner mentioning all those. We are now down to 4, Chicago among them, joined by Las Vegas, Toronto, and Edmonton. And I guess we could know soon if, in fact, we're going to have a dozen NHL teams here in Chicago. The guy who's been following that story, writing about it for Crane Chicago Business, is our guest, Danny Ecker, who is on Twitter at Danny Ecker, joins us once again on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you been, Danny?
I'm good, all things considered. How about you?
Hanging in. So if this is going to happen like 11 days from now, we should know, what, today or tomorrow, if this is the case?
That's all the indications I'm getting is that, you know, this was supposed to happen, you know, late last week or over the weekend. I don't know exactly what is delaying all of the announcements, but, they don't have time to wait around here if they want to stick to the schedule.
So how does this work? How does it work from a housing perspective, from the hotels and dining, et cetera, to actually ice time and who and where and what?
Yeah, so that's what I got my hands on late last week, which was more details about Chicago's bid of how they would host this. And it all really centers around McCormick Place, or part of the McCormick Place campus being turned into sort of an NHL player village. They would use the Marriott Marquis Hotel, which is that big 1,200-room hotel that opened a couple years ago next to the convention center. That would be where everyone stays. And we're talking hundreds of players and team personnel. That's connected by a sky bridge to Wintrust Arena, which would be a training center. And then they would actually open a bunch of hospitality tents connected to the hotel that would be sort of, you know, gaming lounges and other activities for players and personnel to be able to be, you know, socially distancing, but also, you know, live and do other things and have fun while they're not playing. So that would be the bubble. And then they'd be shuttling those players and teams back and forth to the United Center to play, and then they'd use Fifth Third Arena, which is by the United Center, as well as the 2 Johnny's Ice House rinks near the United Center for practices. So, you know, the city has made this pitch and saying, look, we can pull it off. We can, you know, isolate McCormick Place. And, you know, McCormick Place has been mostly empty anyway. So they could say, look, we can really control this, control your environment. You got a lot of ice. And hey, by the way, we've had some pretty good testing numbers recently and good case numbers that have been dropping compared to other cities that are in the running. And so I think the city is holding out hope that they still have a chance.
Are they going to be kicking off the teams that already have reserved ice time at Johnny's and maybe at Fifth Third? And I'm asking this selfishly because I know my son's high school team is just getting ready to start Tuesday evening and Thursday evening practices this week. Like Thursday is when they finally get back out there in phase 4. Do they mean that they're going to have NHL teams commandeering all our ice time?
You know, it's a really good question. I'm not sure how much of that detail has been looked into at this point. I mean, all the indications I've got from people I spoke with who were mostly nervous about speaking on the record about this were saying that, you know, and mostly to not jinx Chicago and not blow the chances, they were saying, I think there's a lot of details that would be negotiated once they've selected these cities. I think the NHL is obviously trying to move fast here, and trying to figure out, you know, which cities they're going to go with, and then getting into the details of what, you know, practice time, what ice was available, could be used. I think it's entirely possible that Fifth Third and Johnny's could, you know, say, look, we need to clear out some time. We're going to rearrange some schedules and try to make it work. I don't know. I think that's kind of one of those things that if they're getting down to these last little detailed questions to figure out where they're going to go, you know, I think the city and you know, Jerry Reinsdorf and Rocky Wirtz at the United Center are really going to try to pull strings where they have to.
Well, I'll just say that Gary Bettman can get our ice time when he pries it from our cold, dead hands. I'm sorry. It's been too long. They worked too hard to try to get it forever, try to get back out there. My goodness. Now, I know that there are some arenas that where they've put in, there is such a thing as temporary ice. And I don't know what Wintrust is able to do, but like when an ice show comes to town in some cow palace somewhere, that they can get it down there. It's not the best ice in the world, but it's functional with temporary compressors in an arena. Do you know if there's any idea of doing that somewhere?
You know, I asked about that, and I don't know, at least for Wintrust Arena, I know that wasn't the plan. I don't think it's hosted an ice event yet. I'm not sure about that, but I don't think it has. And I'm not sure if it's really set up to do so, but I haven't heard of any other ice, you know, temporary setups being used. I'm sure, you know, that certainly could be in play in other cities too anyway, because, I mean, you're looking at cities that only have so much ice, and you know, if these players are looking for practice time, and obviously it has to be of a certain quality. I mean, that's another thing holding all this up, is I think the NHL and the NHL Players Association need to really reach agreements on a lot of different details about where the players are going to go, quarantining, testing, before they're going to go ahead and commit to a city. So I'm not sure about temporary ice, but I think, again, that might be one of those things that, you know, they're having, that's maybe a little bit lower on their list than testing capacity and things like that. I mean, part of the Chicago bid was, you know, they said they're going to have Northwestern Memorial Hospital being, you know, doing the doing all the testing and getting results back a day later. I think Gary Bettman said they were going to have to do somewhere between like 25,000 and 30,000 tests total when you're testing everybody every day. And so testing capacity here was a big thing. That was part of the pitch, was they would use the big East atrium at the United Center as, which is the thing they added on a couple years ago, as just this testing facility where they just turn players and personnel in and out of there to get tested and get the results back the next morning before they leave the hotel. So there's all kinds of these little details that they got to work out, including ice time. And I guess hopefully in the next hours here or days, we're going to have an answer.
Who actually made the pitch? How formalized was this, and what was the process like?
Yeah, so it started back in mid-May, which was actually before the NHL had formally announced publicly what they were planning to do for this playoff format. This was a combination, I think, led a lot. At the time, it started with a letter and some basic details from the United Center joint venture. So, you know, Rocky Wirtz, Jerry Reinsdorf, and working with the Chicago Sports Commission, which is the group that obviously makes the bid for, you know, on behalf of Choose Chicago and organizes all the different parties and sponsors that would be on, you know, involved in that. They obviously were key in getting the NFL draft here, for example. So they were part of it. And I think at some point, there were all these next steps that were coming up. Like, they made that pitch in May. And then the NHL said, okay, well, now we got these down to these 10 cities. All right, let's tell me a little bit more about your testing capacity. Okay, and then they told them about that. Okay, well, then tell me else about the accommodations, you know, and what else you could do. I mean, they had to go so far as, you know, they went through the Chicago Bears, which were going to be staying for before two preseason games in the Marriott Marquis Hotel, actually agreed to move if this thing comes here. So they had gone that far to say, all right, we can – we can make it work. And another big piece for this was that the biggest event that McCormick Place holds, which is in September, was only recently canceled. That was like 3 or 4 weeks ago that they formally announced that wasn't happening. So that opened up space at McCormick Place. So I think they've kind of just had this pitch that progressively started to involve McCormick Place, City Hall, even the governor's office, because obviously the governor and the city share ownership of the convention center. So it just kind of became one of those things that, you know, started involving more parties. But it really, you know, stemmed from the United Center back in May.
What's the financial significance of this? Because obviously there have been, I mean, with all of the conventions, like 100 events, $1 billion may be lost. How much can be clawed back if, in fact, they end up being one of the hub cities?
You know, I don't know a specific number, but I think that, look, if they're going to spend 2 months basically at the hotel and at Wintrust and using other parts of that McCormick Place campus, that's anything right now is significant. I mean, the McCormick Place, the agency that it runs, it just had a $100 million bailout basically from the state legislature through its bonding capacity that it needs to just keep its operations going. They're already going to drain their reserves to pay off their debt. So there's a lot of really tough days ahead for the convention center. And I think this would be a really important win for them. I mean, that doesn't have obviously the usual, spin-off effect that a lot of these conventions do, because you're not going to be helping downtown hotels. Certainly it creates a little bit of compression, I guess, you know, by occupying one big hotel at McCormick Place, but it doesn't, you know, have the same kind of effect to these. Everyone's going to be living in a bubble who comes here for this. So I think it would be a significant source of revenue for a couple months in which McCormick Place has nothing, pretty much nothing on the books. And in the meantime, you know, maybe a bit of a morale booster to say, hey, Chicago can host big events still, and we can, you know, make this work, even if everyone's wearing masks and, you know, socially distancing.
And this would include then the full-blown television production on the league level, mm-hmm. of everything that's going on. So this would be both for the CBC contract in Canada, where they're airing the games there, NBC and NBC Sports here. So I guess we're talking about all of the actual games themselves would be played at the United Center proper, or would they use Allstate Arena potentially?
The pitch said it was all United Center. They were talking about playing 3 games per day at the United Center. So it's a lot of just quick turnaround, and that's where at least it was centered around. I don't know if any of the discussions have gone beyond that and saying, hey, what other ice venues that we could use like Allstate, but they were talking about churning through a lot of games in a very short period of time. That the whole thing would be done, I believe, at sometime in September. So we're talking about, you know, really about 60 days of a season, of not season, but playoffs total.
How hard a bubble can they really have? And this is something the NBA is trying to get their heads around. We were just, you know, talking. We're hearing Lucas Giolito of the White Sox was mentioning it when he was talking about the team coming back. There needs to be a commitment by the players themselves to, frankly, not be in some of these bars. Because we're learning, as the data is coming in these highly affected states, that's where the transmission's occurring. It's people packed mm-hmm. into restaurants and bars. And are you going to keep 12 hockey teams worth of full of players from going out with all the temptation that's around and all the possibilities that are around in a city that's largely reopened?
Well, I think it's, I guess the testing that they're going to be doing is stringent enough that they would be able to, catch anything that happens. And if players are going out, I mean, it might end up coming back to bite them because they're not going to be able to play. And then, obviously, that certainly could then pose its own issues, because if something then spreads throughout a bunch of players, then are you still going to continue with the playoffs, or do you have to just stop in the middle and say, never mind, we tried and didn't work? I don't know. I mean, it's obviously Chicago has had a very cautious approach and, you know, capacity rules of what's allowed to open. And, the compliance so far has been pretty good, and we've seems so far to actually have some good results from that. But I don't know if that might help, keep some players out of it. And they also, I mean, they're really playing up what they were hoping to have in these these hospitality tents for the players that would hopefully keep them all on site. You know, these tents would be actually, they have C3 Presents, which is the group that puts on Lollapalooza, which obviously isn't happening. They were the ones that would be actually operating this village. You know, they talked about, you know, having, you know, just like a ping pong club and golf simulator and arcade bar and billiards and darts and all. I mean, making this so that, you know, in theory, the players can do what they want to do and you know, never really have to leave. So it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think that there, you probably have some scofflaws that are saying, you know, we're going to try to sneak out and go do something else. But there's risk in that. And, you know, I think it could come back and bite them.
Well, it would be really cool for the city, but keep their hands off my ice time. So that's selfishly.
Yeah.
That's because really there are a lot. I'm exaggerating, but there are a lot of clubs, you know, private youth clubs and high school teams and college teams that are just finally emerging from this and just finally getting back out there. And now to have some of that all just commandeered by the NHL would set some of these squads back. It really would.
I think so too. I think that's that. You know, could be a bigger hurdle than I realized.
Danny, thank you so much for joining us. I hope we get the news on this soon.
Yep. Thanks, Dan.
That's Danny Ecker of Crane's Chicago Business, who was all over the story of Chicago potentially being an NHL playoff hub. Let's talk some golf next. Rich Lerner of Golf Channel has been involved in all these last three tournaments, or we have just had some tremendously competitive golf and exciting things going on with just a raft of talented players playing at the peak of their abilities. We just got to get them on a course that tests the distance a little bit. And I want to say it's the Rocket Mortgage Classic coming up. I think it's in Detroit that starts on Thursday. So we'll talk some golf with Rich Lerner next on The Score.
Hey, it's Danny Parkins from the Mac and Parkins Show, afternoons 2 to 6. Well, Cubs and Sox fans, baseball is coming back to Chicago, so keep it on The Score as we'll be discussing this, you guessed it, unprecedented 60-game season. Plus, of course, all the new rule changes and much more. It's all happening on the Mac and Parkins Show, afternoons 2 to 6, on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You know, it feels great to get that win. It's, you know, I was due, and, you know, I felt like I really put in some hard work the last couple weeks. I felt like the game was really starting to come together. You know, even though there's no fans here, you still can feel the pressure, though. And probably the rain delay didn't help very much, because then I had time to, like, actually think about everything when I was, you know, I was kind of in the groove. I kind of got something going there on the back nine, and then had to sit and wait for an hour to go back out and play the last three holes and just hit an awful shot on 16. But, you know, got it done coming down the stretch.
Oh, indeed he did, and that drive on 18 of 350-something was a reminder of just what some guys can do, and other guys even at that level simply cannot or probably wouldn't try when he just needed a par. Dustin Johnson walking with some golf gods now with his 21st win, and he has now won in 13 consecutive years, one of just a handful to do that there with some all-time greats. Here to talk about that and more is Rich Lerner of Golf Channel. He's on Twitter at RichLernerGC, and he's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Rich, how are you?
Dan, I'm doing well. I'm doing this interview with golf club in hand, and I'm phenomenal without a ball. Scratch with no ball, just a club. And I will admit to having, do not tell my wife, to having taken several divots out of doors, chairs, you name it, in the house. I can find them right now if I look hard enough.
The same thing happened here. We had one of those object lesson days where I came home and I knew something was wrong, because I walk in and my son was just standing there, and he's looking at me, and I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, let me just say I was practicing bump and runs in the basement." And I said, "Okay."
I love the phrasing that your kid knows from a bump and run.
Oh no, trust me, he's destroying me. I always tell people right now, I'm at a unique point in life, Rich, where I am now consistently losing to both my son and my father.
What's better than getting beat by your son? Nothing.
And my dad, seriously. Though. I mean, the two of them, I said, they're competing. I mean, they're going stroke for stroke.
Your dad's beating you?
Oh, yeah. I've never in my life have I beaten him, ever.
Is your pop a single digit?
No, but he's pretty close lately. I mean, I think he shot like an 84 the other day. You know, we're saying that maybe he'll get to the point of the problem is when you have a home course that you've been playing for 40 years, mm-hmm. and you know every blade of grass and every place to miss and every undulation for every pin placement. It's like it's just a different level. The institutional knowledge is such you can't compete with it. But taking out chunks of drywall here and there, and there's scuff marks all over the place, finally outside again. But we've been watching a ton of golf, and frankly, what we've been seeing has been so impressive. These last three tournaments, there's just been so many shots made and so many dynamic young players out there. You've really had a product that's been selling itself.
Well, a couple things. I think we've learned in 3 weeks that while golf is obviously better with fans, you think about the Jordan Spieth bunker hole out in Hartford that we've been replaying the last week that happened 3 years ago. Yeah, obviously you want Fenway Park, bottom of the ninth, green monster home run to win. You want that electricity. We didn't have that, but it's very watchable without the fans. It doesn't kill it. And I think Dustin alluded to it, with or without fans, 3 feet, as Colin Morikawa had to stay alive at the Colonial the first week, or Dustin's drive at the 72nd hole, there's pressure with or without the fans. So I think the guys will get work done during the 3 month break. There's no question. The average winning score at the three courses we have now played a year ago was 10 under par. This year it was 18 under par. That is an enormous difference, trust me. And there are a couple of reasons. One, conditions. You get a little softer, guys will take it apart. But the fields have been substantially stronger. And that's the principal reason behind the great play.
Will this course in Detroit at the Rocket Mortgage Classic test them a little bit more? Because it's felt kind of like a pitch and putt for some of these guys with the distances.
It has been a pitch and putt. I mean, Dustin Johnson, Rory DeChambeau, these guys live in what I call a world of 340 out and 110 in. It's a very comfortable place to live in professional golf when you can hit it 340 and you have flip sandwich in. Par for you is 68, 67. Detroit is a classic old school golf course. I'm not on site. I can't give you a really good sense. They tore it apart last year, though. Nate Lashley, who's just in his own right, one of the all-time comeback stories. Nate Lashley, last guy in the field. Nobody knew who he was. 340-something, I think, in the world. And won at, I have to go look, 24, 25 under par. There's not... there's very little today to defend against these great players. I mean, we had four under win at Bay Hill in March. Greens were firm. It was windy. And it was kind of a typical sort of Florida week, and the rough was thick. That's really how you defend now against these long hitters. You have to narrow the fairways and grow the rough, and typically the PGA Tour is not inclined to do that. I think long balls and birdies entertain more than a grinding bogey fest. That's I think we like that at every now and then. Certainly at a major championship, the U.S. Open, you really want to test the guys. But I think week to week, they want to let these guys air it out. You mentioned Dustin's drive at the 72nd hole. He has a history of doing that at Oakmont. When he won his major, U.S. Open 72nd hole, he hit a seed and then a 6-iron close and made the birdie to win it. Doral cleared the Blue Monster, cleared the water a number of years ago on the last hole. I hit the 400-plus-yard drive downhill downwind at Kapalua that almost went in, that my partner Brandel Chambly called the greatest drive he's ever seen. Dustin Johnson, I call him the big dude. Dustin is not unlike say, a Blake Griffin, speaking of Detroit, or maybe more apt would be like LeBron James. He's a physical specimen who can just rob you of your breath with his physical freakishness and his ability to dunk on you. I mean, just throw it down where you go, oh, my, did you see that? That's Dustin. And plus he has that, what he may lack off the court is off course in his interviews. He doesn't light up the TV. He makes up for with just how impressive he is, with the way he hits the golf ball and the way he carries himself. He looks, I'll give you another sports analogy. It's kind of the way he has like the Dustin swagger, the walk. He's the power pitcher who strikes out the side on nine pitches, 101 on the gun, doesn't even consider an off speed pitch, and then just saunters into the dugout as if it was nothing. That's Dustin, and a great athletic family. His grandfather, Art Wisnant, was a great basketball player many, many moons ago.
Well, so was he, right? Wasn't he a tremendous basketball player in his own right?
Dustin was good. The legend has it that Dustin could and maybe still can dunk barefoot. Long levers, long arms, great physique. Just an extreme shoulder turn and great speed through the ball and balance. And he's probably golf's most athletic, naturally gifted athletic player.
Harris English is the fifth player to test positive for COVID-19, joining Dylan Fratelli, Nick Watney, and others. The PGA Tour has decided to crank the dial a little bit on the protocols, saying that there will have to be a negative test to be allowed on property. What's the level of concern right now that you're feeling about the increase in positives?
I think they're concerned, but I also would say they're fairly confident in the protocols they have in place. I don't think they were naive enough to believe that they were going to, make it to week four with no positives. I always believed that it would get harder as they moved along. They're not in one controlled environment as the NBA is planning to do, and we already know the NBA is going to have a difficult time making it all work. The tour's moving from city to city. I think we've, sort of arrived at a period where not unlike, COVID on the national level, when you just watch the news is, oh, okay, another positive today. Oh, and you move on. I don't mean to minimize it, but I think that's my observation as to where we've arrived. And I don't think they're at the point, talking about the tour, where they're, considering shutting it down. That would require, one day, six people announce that they're positive. Then I think we would stop in our tracks and say, hold on, what are they doing here? And to this point, and I don't, again, Cameron Champ being positive is no less serious, or Harris English, no less serious than if Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods were to test positive, right? We know that, but we also understand the way media works and the way, how you grab people's attention. If it is a bigger name, then I think that will invite more scrutiny. But I don't think we're at the point yet where they're considering a shutdown. I think they're at a point where they're managing it and trying to move forward.
Talking with Rich Lerner of Golf Channel here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Big news in the broadcasting industry that NBC has reacquired the rights to the USGA championships, including the US Open. And Fox looks like they kind of wanted to get out of the golf broadcasting business, and they have. So, you mentioned the thick rough and the tight fairways. We see those in US Open play. And now all of a sudden, like our golf world is back in order a little bit. Is Johnny Miller going to come out of retirement?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, Johnny is synonymous with the U.S. Open going back to his playing days when he famously shot a 63 final round on a soft Oakmont golf course in 1973 to win. Fox has had it since, 2015. And I think they made strides and, delivered some technological advancements that the other networks have followed suit with. And they're to be given credit. But the, economics of, pandemic era sports television have changed. And it's just not easy. And so I think, there was an opportunity, for all sides to do something that they felt was in their best interest. I think this is a great move for the USGA personally. And this is with no disrespect to Fox. And this goes beyond the U.S. Open. The number one property for the USGA is the U.S. Men's Open. But they have, I don't know what it is, 14, 15 other national championships that matter to them and matter to all of the golfers who participate. Everything from a U.S. Boys Junior, U.S. Women's Senior Amateur, the Curtis Cup, the Walker Cup, which are high-level amateur events, the Four Ball Championship. Those were getting lost on FS1. Why? Again, no disrespect to FS1. Who would watch the U.S. Boys Junior, the U.S. Men's Senior Amateur? It would be a golf fan. Where does the golf fan park? Dan, you're a golf fan on the Golf Channel, mm-hmm. right? That's where you live if you're a golf fan. All of those now, which were largely unfindable at FS1, again, no disrespect, only because golf fans just kind of didn't know where to look, are now going to be home on the Golf Channel. And that will help the USGA immensely. Any initiative the USGA has, they'll be able to message that to their constituents, the golfers who are parked on Golf Channel typically. So I think it's great for the USGA. They can reach their core audience in a much more timely way, easier. And from our standpoint, it's great. We had the USGA contract for 20 years, it was a big part of the portfolio. And it gives us a great schedule now with the Players Championship. Every other year, we'll have the FedEx Cup playoffs. We have the Open every single year. We'll have the Ryder Cup. We'll now have the U.S. Open, the U.S. Amateur, the Walker Cup to go with our NCAA coverage. It fits us perfectly. It's a huge win for Golf Channel and NBC. I do think it's good for the USGA. And if it helps Fox's bottom line overall as they focus on football and, NFL and college football, then I would suppose it alleviates some financial pressure for them. And I think they did, they did certainly do a solid job in the last few years. And a lot of talented people, put their heart and souls into it.
Last thing for you, I'm looking at the field for the Rocket Mortgage Championship. It looks it's a little different. Some of the familiar names from the last three tournaments look like they might be taking a break here, but still relatively star-studded. Who's a good value bet? Who do you think might be ready to rise here?
I'll say DeChambeau. I don't know. He wouldn't necessarily.
No, he's your favorite right now. 7-1. He's your favorite.
Give me some. I don't have the list in front of me. Give me some 25s and 30s.
You're 25. Sungjae Im is 25-1. Ricky Fowler's 30. Tony Finau's 33. Kevin Na is 35.
I'd say Na's a good value bet. He played well last weekend. Na 35. I like Na. And I like Sungjae Im. Those two guys would be very good value bets. And by the way, just to finish, I had mentioned Nate Lashley, the defending champion, one of the all-time stories. I didn't really complete the tale. I'll try to do this quickly. In 2004, Lashley was playing college golf at Arizona, and he was with his team in the Northwest at an NCAA regional event. And his mother and father and girlfriend flew on a private plane to watch him, as they often did. His dad had his own little plane. And on the way back, Nate was with his team. The plane crashed in Wyoming. and they all died, the girlfriend, the mother, and father. God. And so he set out on this kind of like 10-year journey where he, you know, understandably was kind of lost and sad. And even when he won on the mini tour, he could, just couldn't escape the feeling that something bad was going to happen. So and he quit golf for a while, sold real estate, but he walked through it all. And finally last year, as an alternate and outside the top 300 in the world, he won in Detroit. Very powerful, very emotional story. So root for Nate Lashley. You get a chance. Yeah, Nate Lashley. He's the defending champ.
And you can get him at 150-1 if you want to place the bet on him.
151.
Yeah, 150.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. So, anyway, Dan, it's good being on with you.
And, that's great.
By the way, you were talking about with your kid, and I have two boys. And I would say there's three stages of fatherhood, right? Stage one, they revere you. You can do no wrong in their eyes.
I'm well past that.
I'm in stage two. Stage two, they laugh at you. You're what a technical idiot you are. You can't work anything the way you eat. Right? Whatever it is, they laugh at you. Stage three is they feel sorry for you, and I'm holding off. I'm happy to be in stage two right now. They can laugh at me all they want.
Well, soon enough,
I can still kick their rear end in golf for sure. And occasionally, and they're both good basketball players, occasionally I can, with my size, I can post up, jab an elbow into their chest and, you know, beat them up on the post in basketball. Well, even at my advanced age.
The mistake I made was when I acquiesced and got him this 60-degree wedge, and now it's just like it's shooting darts. And I stand over the thing and can't trust it and just get the complete heebie-jeebies trying to figure out what the shape of my swing. And this thing, it's just raining from the sky within 3 feet of the pin, and it's killing me. But, you got to be proud, right? Go, kid. Rich, this is wonderful. Thank you.
Anytime, buddy. Take care.
That is Rich Lerner of Golf Channel. Coming up next, we are going to continue a conversation we started yesterday as we were talking about potential alternatives to the national anthem. And I thought, well, why don't we track down some people who sing a national anthem and see what they might want to sing? Just if they were asked to sing something else, what would be cool to sing? We're going to ask Wayne Mesmer that question next on The Score.
Start your day with Chicago's Sports Morning Show, Mully and Hall, live at 5, covering the stories that matter to Chicago sports fans. Bears, Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, they're live and they're local. Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
This segment is brought to you by Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care. At 8 p.m., Chicagoans come out to salute essential workers during their shift change. At 8 a.m., Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care opens to keep Chicagoans' transmissions shifting right. Call 1-800-GO-AMCO or search AAMCO for a location near you. So yesterday we talked about what's going on with a minor league professional soccer team in Tulsa, the Tulsa Athletic. They decided that they're not going to play the Star-Spangled Banner anymore. They're going to play Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land, because they find it nicer and more inclusive and less of a flashpoint. So it got us to thinking and talking about possible alternatives, other things that one can sing at sporting events for whatever purpose. We thought the best people to ask about it might be people who actually do it all the time. And one of those guys is Wayne Mesmer, who joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Wayne, how have you been?
Excellent, Dan. How about you, man?
Good enough. Hanging in.
You know, I have on many occasions done God Bless America, but I guess that has been tarnished as well. America the Beautiful. I've done both of those. When we first brought back in 2001, after canceling a 10-game homestand and being the last MLB team to play again at home, that night, I did the Star-Spangled Banner, followed by America the Beautiful, or I guess it was the other way. And World Series did God Bless America and the National Anthem, you know, so I'm okay. It depends on the framework of the question. Are we talking about replacing the anthem, or are we talking about good patriotic songs?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways to look at it. We tried to make it really open-ended because I didn't want to confuse it or over-politicize it, because there is actually a movement to cancel the Star Spangled Banner for various reasons, written by a slave owner. There are other verses that talk about slavery, etc. And I didn't want to take it in that direction. See, for me, it's about maybe broadening the idea of what we sing. If there is a moment for all of us to share some downtime or something, focusing, whatever it may be, before a game on something in common, maybe it doesn't have to be about the country itself. We had a suggestion in the song Lean on Me by Bill Withers, an idea of people being there for each other, of people coming together, and you know, really just kind of keeping it open to whether it's something that makes people feel good or makes people think about something in common, where it doesn't have to be about making people feel a certain way about their country or about a flag.
Well, it's not required. You know, it really is not required. And, you know, coming from a guy who's done it, you know, 5,000 times and certainly benefited from that. When I first started doing the public singing, it was with Lee Stern and the Chicago Sting indoors at Chicago Stadium. And the place was out of control. And that was a God Bless America. It was not a national anthem at every game. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. It was like, I was just happy to be, you know, to be doing it. I think that you kind of hit it on the head. What we need are those central moments of sanity and focus where we're about to enjoy a sporting event. Yay for us. Think how fortunate we are. You know, I don't know. We do need to step back a good distance, and maybe we don't sing a war song, you know.
Right.
But who am I? This land is your land. That's more of a campfire. Kumbaya is next. Maybe we could try that as well, you know.
Yeah, it's folky, and it's also not that much fun to sing. And I think from your perspective, we talked to Matt Spiegel about it yesterday, that the Star Spangled Banner is a really difficult song to sing, and the melody is based on an English drinking song, and it's not easy to do well. You know, you have made it look and sound easy for a long time, and we know from the number of botched versions how difficult it can be. But if you ever go, just out of curiosity, like when you do karaoke or when you sing in the shower, like what is something fun that you just get the endorphin rush from singing it, because it is by its very nature fun to sing?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff, you know, and I do live performances. I mean, I'll do a single show in some restaurant or something, sitting there and just, you know, playing the music. What are you doing here? I'm doing what I love to do, you know, just have fun, sit down and relax. So I sing with a big band. I sing with a lot of jazz. I love Paul Simon. I love James Taylor. I like that kind of stuff. But also, you know, David Clayton Thomas, you know, some of the old Blood, Sweat, and Tears and R&B stuff. You know, it's, if you're given an instrument that, and I say with all gratitude and humility, that has lasted as long as this, especially with a little detour along the way, it's tough not to be grateful. You know, and to be able to try and use the instrument, whether it's speaking or singing. But, you know, it's the vox humana. You know, that's the gift, man, the human voice, and use it. So, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm wondering that you understand that in your role then, and appreciating it, that you're not just performing a song, that there is a moment of connectivity between the competitors and the fans and everything else that's been so hijacked. It's been this moment that should be something that is about, we're all here together and we're all human beings here in this place together. The sense of place is largely gone because we're not there together anymore. And that's being tested in pandemic. But it's just, I guess what it comes down to, it's so unfortunate that so much has happened to pull those connections apart and to strain those connections. And I guess my purpose for having the conversation is wondering how we can weave it back together.
Well, as a singer, it is that one moment, and I generally prefer to sing a cappella. It's that one moment when everyone is looking at you and you have that opportunity. It's like as a speaker, which I do a lot of, after a good introduction, you have the audience in the palm of your hand until you screw it up, you know? And if I can hold their attention by singing the national anthem as a poem that it is and add music and kind of, you know, be the blue collar Chicago guy, I don't know. I think that's what people kind of like. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been doing it this long, you know. But it's a moment. You have to connect. And depending on the environment of one sport or another, some take it a lot more seriously than others.
Well, I know we've been well served by the way you have taken it for lo these many years at various venues, and it's appreciated. And here's hoping as we emerge from this that there will soon be screaming throngs of fans at arenas once again enjoying it. Wayne Messmer, thank you for taking time out of your day for us. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Dan.
That is Wayne Messmer. Some thoughtful stuff from him. And like you say, when you have that kind of singing voice, speaking voice, whatever it is, the way he uses it, his understanding of the power of it is why we wanted to put him on. And look forward to maybe hearing from some more and how they feel about it. But here, you know, when he says, you know, Paul Simon and James Taylor, "This Land Is Your Land" indeed is sort of a campfire-y type song. But for those of us of a certain age, and who went to, you know, certain kinds of summer camps, I definitely associate Paul Simon and James Taylor, along with Cat Stevens. You know, you start looking at some of these other who are the popular artists where, you know, I would know as a little kid, I would know a song as a camp song before I would even hear it at some point. They'd say, "Wait a second, that's from camp." Like, no, that's Cat Stevens. He was an actual guy who performed some of these. So that's I guess kind of the vibe I'm looking for. I don't know that we had any brought up yesterday from those particular artists, but that was really fun stuff with Wayne Messmer. Man, that was a hell of an 11 o'clock hour. Dude, because if you're a golf fan, Rich Lerner gave you a lot in there. I mean, golf business and golf insight and everything, and even a couple of names if you're a gambler. So all good stuff. We thank all of our guests who joined us today. Wayne Messmer, Patrick Mooney, Cody Decker, Rich Lerner, and Danny Ecker. I just really went Decker and Ecker. Deco and Ecker. Worked out very, very nicely. But that was good. It was fun. I always end up feeling better for some reason at the end of the show. Most days. Unless I'm completely miserable. Which I'm going to just decide not to be for the rest of today. So there's that. That's good. Lawrence Holmes is coming up. And I'll be back again with you tomorrow. We'll have my Florio on a Wednesday, as we always do. And thanks to Jay Zawoski, thanks to Ray Diaz, thanks as always to everybody back that is helping out doing the in-studio stuff, where there's Kevin Zipak and Shane Reardon and Mitch Rosen and all the other hands on deck there. Thanks to you for hanging out, and look forward to hanging out again. Stay safe. Keep your mask on when you can. And if you can't socially distance, and if you're in a grocery store, just wear your mask over your nose and your mouth. It's amazing what it does when you're breathing through your nose to have that mask, you know, over your nose. Keep listening to doctors. Things are looking up. We are, as long as we're smart and we're listening to the smart people, good things are going to happen, even if bad things are happening elsewhere where people are being dumb and are listening to dumb people. We can listen to doctors and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Stay safe, be well, and we will talk again tomorrow at 9.
Hey, Cubs fans. Pat Hughes here. Baseball is back, and so are the Cubs.
It's got a chance! Cubs win!
Join Ron Coomer and me for all 60 action-packed games of this unprecedented 2020 season right here on 670 The Score.
A swing and a drive. Deep left center. It's got a chance! Cubs win!
It's been a long wait, Cubs fans, but it's time to play ball. All 60 Cubs games will be right here on 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.